Hello and welcome to Heart Yoga Radio. Pete and I are off on one of our many walks down the Wolverhampton Canals, and today we want to record episode 7 in our Lao Tzu series. So Pete's going to read out this chapter that we're going to discuss today, and then we'll have a little bit of chat about it.
It's chapter 12, and I'm just going to read it. The five colours blind the eye. The five notes deafen the ear. The five tastes deaden the mouth. Riding the chase on horseback over the fields drives you crazy when you overdo it. And wanting what's precious, you do what distorts your being. The sage knows this in his gut and is guided by his instincts, and not by what his eyes want.
So, any thoughts about that?
One or two. So again, Lao Tzu is advising us. He's giving us some clues on what he takes to be the best way to live and the best way to be. His advice is always about being, a way of being in the world. And what he's recommending here is, as we mentioned before, a kind of quietism. And this time he's talking about that quietism in relation to the senses and in relation to desire. He realises that human desire, in some senses, knows no limit. And he's actually counselling us to be a little bit careful with our desire. It's not suggesting that we suppress it totally. I mean, I think he recognises that it has a place in life. But he's warning against the craziness, as he calls it, the craziness of wanting stronger and stronger sensations. So this is desire related to sensory experience and maybe to pleasures. And he's saying, well, you can overdo it. I mean, for instance, you know, the five sounds deafen the ear. Well, imagine that you just went to a rock concert every night, really loud heavy metal. I mean, you might, as much as you like heavy metal, you might be a fan of heavy metal, nevertheless, yeah, well, you will actually end up literally deaf, for a start. But also, you'll get fed up with it. You'll be sated with it. You'll be almost to the point that it'll make you feel ill and disjointed and so forth.
Yeah. Well, if you're Christmas pudding every day, if you like Christmas pudding, you would just get sick of it.
Yeah, well, Christmas pudding's a once a year treat, you know. And he's talking about that kind of thing. And the thing of wanting excitement, he talks about, you know, hunting and the excitement of hunting and tally-ho across the fields on your horse. But he says you keep doing it and you keep doing it because you want more and more excitement. That you become very, very jaded, you know. And he says the sage knows this in his gut as well. He says, look, an instinct, you know. That there is an instinct in us that will counsel us against this kind of excess. So it is a counsel, against excess of sensory indulgence and excess of the pursuit for excitement. He also talks about the grasping for the precious. You know, that will uninge you, what does he say?
Even if that precious that you desire is peace in a peace and quiet, even if you're craving enlightenment, the busyness of chasing it will of course
for Lao Tzu,
you don't get it.
For Lao Tzu, enlightenment is one of the most precious things, and yet he'll counsel you against over pursuing it.
If you go to every single workshop in the world,
well, we see it
more,
we?
And more and more and more and more.
We see it. You know, the wanting what's precious, you do what distorts your being.
Yeah.
I mean, the precious. you know, Smeagol, you know, in Lord of the Rings.
Fill your mind so yeah. full of yeah. all these.
Smeagol is so obsessed with the ring, the one ring, that it just turns him into this kind of twisted being that's just absolutely monomaniacally obsessed with this one, obtaining this one object. To the extent that there's nothing else.
Yeah.
And he really is quite a twisted little creature, and Tolkien works that up very well, doesn't he? And this is exactly what Lao Tzu is talking about, to be honest with you. Does he have a point? Well, yes, I think he does have a point. I think that he's offering something here, in this verse, that we all recognise. We know that if we keep going for it, if we do keep going to the heavy metal concert, night after night after night, you know, that we get fed up.
And he won't actually give us, like, fed up, but he won't give us pleasure anymore. No. It's like those things that, and then, once those things don't give us pleasure anymore, don't give us what we want, then we start looking for the next thing, something bigger, more. And I think that's what you're saying.
Yeah.
So you've got the one colour in your eye, and then you need another one and another one until you've got all five.
Yeah, so what it does, it's a spiral into addiction that he's talking about as well.
Yeah,
you can understand.
He's covering that too, yeah.
He's covering that.
Because you're not sated with just one colour.
No.
You want another one until you've got the whole five.
Yeah. Well, we do like to be excited, and we do like to be to have our senses titillated, and there's a place for that. And I think he recognises that there is a place for that, because when he's talking about the hunting and the excitement of hunting, he's saying, well, don't overdo it. It's not like never do it. Let's have festivals and parties. But the perpetual party, it's a leap off the cliff. Really? I was going to say it was a cul-de-sac, but it's not actually. It's just like a never-ending dissatisfaction.
Yeah. Blah, blah, blah. No satisfaction.
No.
You're not satisfied.
I can't get no satisfaction. Yeah. And I tried, and I tried. And it's all that kind of scenario.
Yeah.
And it's almost like he's talking about modern life, our modern life, 21st century, postmodern life, maybe you want to call it, where the pursuit of more and more stimulus is the thing. It's the raison d'etre. Of course, it powers the economy.
Yeah, well.
And
our society is very much in favour of all five of everything. To manufacture the desire for all five of everything.
And more and more of it. And as I say, it manufactures dissatisfaction, and promises a cure for that dissatisfaction, which is an empty promise. By purchasing this or that, yeah. By getting this stimulus or that stimulus.
Some of that going on in Lao Tzu's time.
Well, it's the part of the human condition.
Yeah.
That you get beguiled by that.
Yeah.
You get beguiled by the excitement of it, and it is. It's. They're saying there's nothing wrong with it, per se, but to think that is what you've got to do, keep doing forever, that is your only modus operandi, is a disaster. And even in the sphere of spirituality as well, as you mentioned.
Yeah.
And perhaps particularly in that. And of course in our modern, in the developed world, our postmodern or modern 21st century situation.
Speaking of modern world, what you can hear in the background is our very English ice cream van. So carry on.
Yeah. A charming phenomenon. And of course, you can drive yourself crazy with spiritual shopping.
Yeah.
Wanting the next thing, wanting to tick the boxes, and people do it. People, there's no end of people doing it.
And
it does. It drives you crazy.
Yeah.
It will drive you crazy.
Like when he talks about the hunt, it's like he's almost talking about that, because some people are just like they're on a hunt.
Yeah.
For enlightenment, some sort of like spiritual enrichment, which will give them the satisfaction that they desire.
Yeah.
And they will literally, you know, just become they're sort of like workshop junkies.
Yeah, we call them workshop junkies. Yeah. And of course, yeah,
you know, that it's a bad thing to go to, you know, and see lots of different points of view, but
there's a limit.
Yeah,
there's a limit, and you know, pursuing the precious overzealously, and the precious is enlightenment. You know, will the jewel, as it's known in various traditions, you will end up distorted, distorted. So he's saying take a break from that sometimes is what I think that he's telling us, you know, and that there's great virtue in the quietness, and great pleasure in sensory stimulus, which is sort of quite low key, like this, like the way the trees are just slowly turning to autumn now, and you look down the tunnel, down the track here, and you're just getting the hint of the ochres and the reds coming into the leaves and the beginning of autumn. And we've had some high winds, and there's like a lot of leaves on the floor now, and it's beautiful, but it doesn't overload the senses. But it's very, 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 very sweet. But also, it's non-addictive. You walk away from it quite easily. You're not kind of hitting. You're like rats hitting the button.
Yeah.
You can put like a rat in a maze or a cage, and you can have it so there's a button. And if the rat hits the button with its nose, it gets a little drink of water, which kind of lice with amphetamines. And rats will, so amphetamine gives you this dopamine hit, and this is what he's talking about, the dopamine hit.
Yeah.
And they'll do it till they die. They'll keep it in it till they die. They won't eat, they won't sleep, they'll do it till they die.
Yeah.
And this is what he's warning us against. And it is just as a modus operandi and as a truth, a lot of this just low-key stuff. If you can get over the restlessness that modern life has induced in you, you suddenly discover this whole universe of delight.
Yeah.
And of the kind of delight. Of the kind of delight that draws you back to the jewel.
Yes.
Without any obsession or overzealous pursuit. And this is what he's talking about. And as I say, yeah, it's a critique of our past modernity. Now, I do, however, want to make a case for the Dionysian, and for the excitement, and for the overload, for the sensory overload, and for the Blakean excess. You know, Blake said, yeah, the road of excess leads to the palace of wisdom. He's right, but you can't do it all the time. The point is that if one goes down that road, if one does work through overload and the desire for sensory overload with the light show and the heavy and the loud music and the acid and the orgiastic sex and all the rest of it, that you come to a point where you no longer want it anyway. You work through, the idea is to work through to a point of satiation, so that then the low-key stuff can kick in. You don't have any resistance to the low-key stuff. And most modern people have a big resistance to the low-key that Lao Tzu is talking about, to the simple pleasure of the light on the water and the sparkle in the eyes of your beloved. Those simple pleasures are a bit elusive for modern people because we are programmed to seek more and more and more and more and more excitement and to consume spend more money, therefore, and keep this kind of hyper malignant economy going. But there's a place for it, the Dionysian, there's a place for the Dionysian. But the thing about the Dionysian is that it's a carnivalesque, it's a festival, and we don't have a festival all the time. Yeah, we eat rice and beans. At Christmas we have some Christmas pudding. Yeah, and because Christmas is a festival, so we have Christmas pudding, crackers, and a glass of sherry, whatever. and that is the place of the Dionysian, and there is a place for it, because it enables this abandonment of differentiated self, or which is what we loosely call ego, so that we get it, we in that way we get a glimpse of the precious, the jewel. And that's what it's for. And as I say, I don't think Lao Tzu is necessarily against it, but he's aware of its danger. And this is probably that old polarity, yoga and tantra, you know, sober yoga, intoxicated tantra, as paths to the jewel, even though there is no path, of course, we have to keep saying this to people. And in a way, Lao Tzu is saying that, you know, he said, well, there isn't really a path. But watch out for these things that will divert you and pull the wool over your eyes. In other words, they will actually desensitise. I mean, he's talking about, isn't he? He's talking about how the eyes, you overindulge in visual sensuality, you overindulge in aural sensuality. Senses become dull. But if we're to apprehend the jewel, we need through the senses, which you can. The senses need to be sharp.
Yeah, you need a great sensitivity.
And sensitivity and open and alert. Yeah. And this is what he's talking about. And I, as I say, I don't see that there is a stark opposition between the Dionysian and the Quietist, and the explosion of festivity. And the quietness of an equanimity in the midst of life, with all its small pleasures and its small sensory stimuli, which, as I said, can become utterly delightful and utterly the carriers of the jewel. But it's not a stark opposition. Yoga and Tantra is not a stark opposition. We need peace, but we need festivity, and that is built into us. And we can't repress either. Our society attempts to repress both, except allowing a certain overexcitement as an approximation of the Dionysian, whilst at the same time it feels the full amplitude of the Dionysian. It doesn't want people to completely lose their individuated identity, because they'll stop being consumers. They will no longer care about the status that accrues to them through the objects that they own. They will no longer care. Similarly, it doesn't want us to be peaceful, because we'll live on nothing. We'll live very simply. We won't need this stuff. We won't be looking for the next best thing, you know, upgrade the car, upgrade the house, etc. We will no longer care. Either way, we will no longer care. So our society is in a funny place, you know, wanting to inflame our desire, but not take it all the way to the Dionysian explosion, into satiation and peace, but not wanting us to enter the peace directly anyway. It needs us to be restless.
Yeah, it does.
So I think in that verse, in that very short verse, few lines, there is sound advice. And I can vouch for what he's saying. I've tested it for decades. And even though I'm not averse to the Dionysian, I am a Dionysian, I can't help it. It runs in the family. But at the same time, I don't want it all the time. You know, once a year.
Or maybe a bit more often than that. Once a week, at least.
Yeah, maybe.
When I was creating my... Utopia in Space.
Yes.
It's basically a massive hippie commune on a space station. And
when's the next rocket I'm going?
I know. What they do is they once a week they have these beautiful gardens in one of the organic pods that are within the space station.
Yeah.
And they have a once a week Dionysian evening.
Yeah.
And I was making this decision about how these people would live.
Yes.
And they're living everywhere else is colonized by
nasty people. Or nasty creatures.
Extremely austere religious fanatics.
Yeah.
So they're really They've moved away because they want to live a different life. And I was thinking, well, what different life would they want? What's going to make them happy? What's going to bring their community together and make it so that they can live peacefully? And they needed that. And I was thinking once a month, once every 2 weeks. I thought, no, they need it once a week, man. Yeah. It's got to have a once a week thing. So the adults, once are the over 16s, they have this party, this wonderful party in the woodland garden.
Yeah.
So I thought once a week was necessary.
Yeah. In nature's accounts of the Dionysian in ancient Greece, which gives in the birth of tragedy, his first crazy book, the one that kind of ruined his academic career, maybe. But he talks about it having this social function of bonding a community together, because everybody melts into everybody else. Of course, the other person talks about this is Terence McKenna. But if we have a craving for that all the time, you know, this is what Lao Tzu is warning us against there, vis-a-vis festivity. You just want a permanent party. And that's not the way parties work. Because in human beings, there's a rhythm of desire and the condition of being satiated. And it's important that we honour that about ourselves. It strikes me. But certainly excess, you know, just permanent excess with no insight into how it's working. Well, the sage knows in his gut that this is not the way to go. This is not an intelligent way to live. Now, I just want one last comment, really, here. It's to light upon that idea of what the sage wants in his gut, rather than what the senses are telling us. And Lao Tzu, like Patanjali and other great chroniclers of the human encounter with the mystery of existence, the human encounter with the jewel, tells us that there is an intuitive form of knowledge. And Lao Tzu is telling us here how to cultivate that intuition, just as Patanjali does from a slightly different angle in the Yoga Sutras. And yet, as if we can be a bit quiet inside ourselves, we know stuff, we see stuff, we harness our intrinsic wisdom. We start to get some clarity about the destructive patterns that are so easy for us to fall into, given the nature of our desire and given the nature of societies which manipulate citizens in order to keep some particular form of organisation going and some particular form of power dynamic going. This is stuff you can see if you allow yourself to be a bit quiet, if you step away from the bamboozlement of your intelligence by the incessant need for a dopamine hit, or the incessant need for the excitement of the hunting field, or the incessant overload of party, party, party. Yeah. How many people in the rave culture sort of raved like hell for one or two years, and then obviously you crash eventually, and then just hurtled off to a Buddhist monastery to have six months of silence just to get the shit back together. I mean, it was like dozens of people I knew were doing stuff like that, because they sort of burned out with this deadening that occurs if you don't know when to stop with that.
Yeah. Knowing when to stop is actually quite a fine art.
It is. But if you're still, you'll know it in your gut.
Yeah.
It's be still and know. And every great meditative tradition tells you that. Be still and know. So maybe that might be a place to stop.
Yeah, that sounds good. Oh, well, I hope you found that interesting. And we will be recording the next episode in this series very soon, after we've had a party.
Yes, we're going to go back and have a small party now. And then we're going to look out the window.
Gaze at the clouds.
And gaze at the clouds, that's true. And the autumn leaves. So remember to tell all your friends to sponsor us.
That would be nice.
And over and out.